You know, it was 25 years ago today, one of the greatest finishes in SummerSlam history involving Bret Hart, Shawn Michaels, and The Undertaker. It was also the night that Steve Austin got dropped right on his head. And we very nearly had the career derailed of one of the greatest of all time. How different things might have been if Austin was not able to come back from that injury. But that was 25 years ago in East Rutherford, New Jersey. Tonight, though, was about AEW Dynamite. They were live in Columbus, Ohio. Another very good episode coming off last week. Not as good as last week, but I thought the pacing of the show was noticeably better. They gave things time to breathe, which is a common complaint that I've had about this show now for a while. I thought the ladies killed it in the ring tonight. I thought the ladies had the best match on the entire show. Thunder Rosa, Toni Storm, Britt Baker, Jamie Hayter, they went in there tonight. They had a very physical match, and I thought they had the match of the night. We also had a major angle on the show tonight. We had Adam Cole and Red Dragon back for the first time together on TV in quite a while, and they shot a major angle that is going to make things very interesting for when Kenny Omega does finally make his return to TV. So we'll break this whole show down here in a little bit, but this is your AEW Dynamite review for August 3rd, 2022. I am the Solemn Monster. We have news to get into before we even get into the Dynamite show here tonight. Am I sounding okay? I want to make sure I sound my best for all of you. So before I get into all this news that I have to cover, I want to make sure that the audio is sounding okay. I am a little fuzzy. All right, let me see here. I will adjust this for you guys. I don't want to get into all the news here before I make sure this is fixed. Hold on a second. All right, test. We should be good now. You guys, let me know. If there's any issues, we will adjust. Now, as I said, I got some news. AEW today made a very important announcement. They announced changes to its talent relations and development team. And as part of those changes, they have brought in a former Impact Wrestling Knockouts champion as a coach. Although we also saw at the end of the night when they made the announcement for Rampage on Friday, she's going to be doing some wrestling as well. This is from the press release. I'll just read a little bit to you. Sounds better, huh? Sounds better? Did my fix work? You're welcome. This is from the press release. AEW CEO, GM, and head of creative Tony Khan today announced an expansion to AEW's talent relations team with the promotion of key staff members including Sanjay Dutt, QT Marshall, Pat Buck, and Tony Schiavone. As if Tony Schiavone didn't have enough responsibilities as it is, now he's been promoted. In addition, Madison Rayne will join AEW as a coach in the women's division. As AEW continues to its meteoric rise, that's what they said in the press release, the expanded talent relations team will strengthen the infrastructure required to facilitate the development, health, and safety of AEW's outstanding roster. And so these are the moves. Effective immediately, Sanjay Dutt has been promoted to Vice President of Production and Creative Coordination. In this role, he will coordinate communication of AEW storylines. He will liaise between post-production and key staff to maintain content workflow, blah, blah, blah. I'm not going to get into the weeds here. That's his new role. QT Marshall has been promoted to Vice President of Show and Creative Coordination. He will help manage show elements, including planning programs and storylines, character development, among other things. And it does say in the press release, they do make it very clear that he will continue to wrestle as well. So, womp womp. Pat Buck has been promoted to Vice President of Talent Development. In this position, he will liaise with talent and production and oversee all of the coaches, provide input on matches and promos. And he will lead the talent relations team, which is important given some of the recent news. I'll get to that in a second. Tony Schiavone has been promoted to Senior Producer and Special Advisor to Talent. In this capacity, he will work directly with talent as part of the talent relations team. And Madison Rayne will join AEW as a coach in the women's division and kick off her new role tonight in her hometown of Columbus, Ohio. Christopher Daniels is going to continue to serve as manager of talent relations. So I bring this up not just because it's news, but I bring it up because we just got done talking about the Jonathan Gresham story in the last couple of weeks. And supposedly some of his beefs with Tony Khan not being accessible, there being a lack of communication, going back many months, he never really knew what was going on. Nobody would fill him in. And there have been reports about other talents who have also had similar complaints about there sometimes being communication issues behind the scenes. And it's a situation where Tony Khan can't be all things at all times, and he can't be everywhere at all times. You know, he's spreading himself thin enough as it is with all of his different responsibilities. Now you throw Ring of Honor in there. He has his non-wrestling responsibilities. It's too much for one person if a lot of this is going to fall on his shoulders. And so I just got done talking about this about a week ago when I said they need to address the situation as far as talent relations is concerned. Either outsource it to somebody else or at least share those responsibilities with a larger team. Yeah, I knew Christopher Daniels had some involvement in that. I didn't know if he was the only person or not. The answer is no, he is not. So I don't want to put that all on him. So this is a positive move. You know, again, this should help alleviate some of the, you know, if there's a bottleneck of some kind, this should help alleviate that a little bit. And again, take some of that responsibility away from Tony Khan because he has a lot of different hats that he wears. And the last thing that he needs is to create a situation where people are getting frustrated because they have concerns or they have questions and they just don't know what's going on because they feel they have to go to him. Or if there's a designated person, that person maybe isn't getting back to them. So now they have a whole team of very capable people who can address all of these different issues. So that is a positive thing. Now, we move on to this next item here. Of course, everybody knows what's been going on with WWE. The big shakeup there, Vince McMahon gone, Triple H, the new head of creative, Stephanie McMahon, the new co-CEO with Nick Khan. Big shakeup in WWE. While speaking with the website Sports Grid, Tony Khan admitted that he is now more concerned than ever that some of his stars could potentially go over to WWE when their contracts expire. This is what he said. He said, "I think that's always been a concern, but now probably more so than ever, I imagine great wrestlers are going to be in demand. And again, I think this is probably going to be good for the wrestling fans because that is one of the most exciting things about pro wrestling, free agency. It's one of those things that was really missing from the sport for almost two decades before AEW came in because there was not a legitimate competitor in the free agent market, and now there is. I think it's going to be some exciting times ahead, hopefully for many years to come. One of the worst things that happened, I think, in American sports in my lifetime was when WCW closed down. And there should always be another national wrestling company." So that was from Tony Khan. He may not have meant it that way, but that is some serious shade thrown at TNA. That was my first takeaway from that quote. Because, you know, to say that there hasn't been another company in two decades. Now, TNA was formed in 2002, so you would have to go back exactly two decades from when they were, you know, created out of the ashes of WCW. To say that there hasn't been another company in two decades that has been a competitor in the free agent market. All right, I want you to think of the names that TNA had under contract at various points, right? Whether it was Hulk Hogan, Kurt Angle, Sting, some of their homegrown talent, AJ Styles, Samoa Joe, Abyss, right? You could come up with a whole list of different talents, old and young. Now, Abyss, I mentioned Abyss, right? Now, Abyss works as a producer for WWE behind the scenes, but back when he was a talent many, many years ago and he was in TNA, Abyss had a standing offer. Tommy Dreamer told the story because he was working in talent relations for WWE at the time. Abyss had a standing offer to go to WWE to work a program with The Undertaker, and he got cold feet at the last minute. I think they were going to debut him at the Royal Rumble. It might have been for a WrestleMania match. and he got cold feet. He was very loyal, I guess, to TNA, and he decided to stay. So, again, I don't think he meant it in a negative way, like he was taking a swipe at them, but to make that kind of comment and say there's been no other national company in 20 years that's been competitive in the free agent market, you know, in pro wrestling, that is quite the diss. Now, as far as what he said, it is going to make things more fun for the fans to follow along to see who's going to jump where. There'll be more guys and girls that go from WWE to AEW, but Cody Rhodes is not going to be the only AEW star that leaves and goes to WWE. Who that next person is going to be, nobody knows. Is it going to be a VP? Probably not one of the EVPs, but it will be a situation where you're going to have people going back and forth. Now more so, I think, because Vince McMahon is out of the way. And because you have people working right now for Tony Khan who were in that NXT system, who worked under Triple H, who probably liked Triple H. And if he was running the company years ago, they probably would still be there. So he should be concerned. Because before it was all about, hey, bring me your huddled masses, right? This is a refuge for all these people who were disenfranchised by working for Vince McMahon and being in WWE. Come work for us. The grass is greener over here. And now the tide may be turning. You know, he may not be able to rely on that anymore. If WWE can turn things around a little bit where they start, you know, improving their shows and you get these stories of people who actually, you know, they have a little more freedom to try things maybe and things begin to really improve. And there's this level of optimism, which we're already hearing about behind the scenes in WWE, that there's this increased level even now. And it's only been a week or two that he's really taken over. You know, you're already hearing about reports of you know, increased optimism from a lot of the talent and people who work there behind the scenes. If I'm Tony Khan and I want to retain some of the people that are working for me right now, I want to lure new people to come over. Yeah, I would be concerned too, but it does make things more fun, right? More competition is great for everybody. Competition is great for the fans. Competition is great for the talent. Now there may be a bidding war for people who before maybe there wouldn't have been a bidding war for. What'll end up happening is they'll make more money. They'll go wherever the money is going to be better. You want me, pay me. So it's a great thing all around. But yes, if you're Tony Khan, then you have to be concerned because you're going to have to break the bank open for some people who maybe before you wouldn't have had to do that for. And we'll see. I have to think that there are going to be people who work for AEW right now who are absolutely going to be more open to going to WWE or going back to WWE, who before would have said, I don't want to fucking have anything to do with that place. Now things may be very different. There is a big bloodletting going on. This was the other thing that kind of ties into all of this that I think is relevant. I'm sure some of you saw the stories that were popping up today about Batgirl. And there's a lot of stuff going on right now in the land of Warner Media, Warner Discovery. There's a big bloodletting going on right now at Warner Brothers Discovery after their merger. They killed the Batgirl movie that was set to be released on HBO Max. They're not even going to distribute it. A $90 million film that was already in post-production with Michael Keaton, no less, back playing the role of Batman. I was actually looking forward to seeing that. I remember when this was first announced and they said Michael Keaton, he's going to be getting back in the costume. He's going to be reprising the role of Batman again for the first time since whenever that second Batman movie came out with Penguin, I guess, what was that, 90? Probably 1990. I know the first one was out in 89. And probably still my favorite Batman, in all honesty, of all the people who have played Batman. Although I didn't see the most recent one. But he was in that movie. May never be seen. The movie now may never even be seen. Company is trying to shed $3 billion from its balance sheets. So they are making all kinds of cuts. The Batgirl one apparently had more to do with them being able to write the whole thing off. It was like a tax thing, but they had to make a move by the middle of this month. So they said, oh, it's not a reflection of the quality of the film. It's just to save money. You know, we have to go and we have to make this move now before it's too late. It was an accounting issue. But imagine how the people who worked on the fucking movie must feel right now. but they are getting rid of most, if not all, scripted programming on HBO Max. Now, the announcement is probably coming tomorrow, because I think they have an earnings call tomorrow. And the announcement is probably going to come tomorrow that HBO Max is being folded into Discovery Plus, because they each had their own streaming services, right? There's no need to have two of them. So they made the announcement back in March that they were going to be merging the two. We just didn't know if it was going to be Discovery Plus folding into HBO Max or HBO Max folding into Discovery Plus. Some of you may have subscriptions already to Discovery Plus. I've heard pretty bad things about the platform itself. I've used HBO Max. I like it in terms of the navigation and everything, but it sounds like HBO Max may be sunsetting. It may be going away. And it may be folded into Discovery Plus. We'll find out probably tomorrow exactly how that's going to work. What all of this means, though, for AEW, because I already had questions from people, is this good or bad for AEW? It's not good, but it's not necessarily bad, but it's definitely not good. Exactly what it means for AEW, that remains to be seen. I don't get the sense. This is just me talking. I'm trying to keep up with all these stories. And I mean, again, they're making cut after cut after cut. I don't get the sense that they really care all that much about TNT and TBS. I don't get the sense that their cable networks are really their priority right now. And so it makes me wonder, you know, what other cuts they might make. Basically, anything that is not live sports is pretty much on the chopping block. If you have some kind of scripted programming on any of these stations or on an HBO Max, you're not safe. AEW, I would think, is considered live sports. So that's something that works to their benefit. They're not scripted programming. They're not like a drama or a comedy or anything. I mean, they have elements of comedy, but they're not a comedy, and they're not a drama. They're not a type of show like that. That probably works to their advantage. But the way that they're looking to make cuts right now, I'll tell you one thing, though. I am finding it harder and harder to believe that AEW is going to get more money from them when their TV deal is due to be renegotiated, which is coming up fairly soon. By next year, they're going to be negotiating on a new television contract. And they're going to be looking to make more money. Now, Tony Khan might be able to get the same deal. They might be very happy with Tony Khan. Remember when Tony was like, oh, we had this great mixer. It was after the LA show in June, the very beginning of June. They had their first Los Angeles Dynamite. And Tony was crowing about how we had this big party when the show was over with all the executives and the wrestlers, and it was great. And that's great. You want to be able to do that sort of thing, but these guys are cutthroat. You can have a party with them one day, and the next day they could slit your throat. So you can have all the mixers you want, but if they're looking to shed $3 billion off their balance sheets, it's fair game. Anything's possible. You think they're really going to give a shit about pro wrestling? In the grand scheme of things? AEW could be doing twos in the Nielsen ratings every week, and it might not matter. It might not make a difference. So they may be able to get the exact same deal and say, look, we're happy with you guys. We're happy with what you're being paid. We'd like to continue on with you for another 3 years. That's not what Tony Khan wants. Tony Khan wants more. He wants like WWE. Every time they escalate and they get more and more money. That's what he wants. He wants more money on this next deal. If he's looking to double or triple the amount of money that he's going to be making, he could be in for a rude awakening if he's expecting to get it from Warner and Discovery. And so that is what I think the real issue may end up being for AEW. I don't think it's going to be hard for them to land somewhere. It's not like if they can't get more money, the company is done. But it's a very big problem that they could be facing in the face of all of these cuts. How would they justify double or tripling AEW's contract when look at what they're doing everywhere else? They're not looking to spend more. They're looking to cut as much as possible. So that is the bad news for AEW. That is going to be the story to watch. Would not at all surprise me if AEW ends up maybe on a streaming service of some kind. Instead of being on TNT and TBS at the end of this deal, they may end up on a streamer. And take your pick, there's so many of them. Is that going to end up being a good thing or a bad thing for the company? it all boils down to how much money they're getting. It ties into what I was just talking about in terms of Tony Khan being concerned that he might not be able to retain all of the talent that he has. If he's going to be competing with WWE, you need money. You need money to compete. He has to double or triple the value of that television contract, or he may not be able to retain some of these people. That's why it's so important that he is able to bring in more money. That is in question right now after some of the events that we read about today and what we see going on behind the scenes with this company. On a more positive note, there is another piece of news. Peacock, people are saying Peacock, AEW on Peacock. Maybe when the WWE deal with Peacock is over. I think Peacock is pretty happy with WWE, though. I don't know that they want that deal to come to an end without a renewal. But I guess if they were to lose WWE, it's possible. Wouldn't that be something if AEW ended up on Peacock? On a more positive note, we had video game news today. People have been wondering what's been going on with the AEW video game. We got some news. We got a teaser trailer, too. Didn't really show us much, but THQ Nordic, Yuke's, and AEW today confirmed that the release of the AEW Fight Forever video game will be made available to players on PC, PS4, PS5, Xbox One, Xbox Series X and S, and I didn't know this, but it will be on Nintendo Switch. So if you own a Nintendo Switch, you will be able to play AEW Fight Forever when it comes out. The game is available right now for pre-order on Amazon for $59.99. And it has a listed release date of December 31st. I'm sure that's just a placeholder. That's a Saturday. The game's not coming out on a Saturday. So that's a placeholder date. I don't know. They probably are shooting to get it out this year. But it could be early 2023. We don't know yet. Here's what the game is offering here. I'll put this up on the screen, because this will give you a quick synopsis here of what is to be expected in this game. There will be a career mode. They will have online multiplayer. There are custom modes. So you can create custom wrestlers, custom movesets, entrances, custom teams. I assume that means factions. God knows there's a lot of those in AEW. And custom arenas as well. So you'll have different levels of customization. They also, by the way, have mini games. In some of the footage that was released, they showed they were in the stadium where they had Stadium Stampede, and they were hitting baseballs. So there's like a baseball mini game. They have all kinds of little mini games in Fight Forever. But you see on your screen, there's different match modes. Singles, tag team, three-way, four-way, ladder matches, casino battle royale, false count anywhere, unsanctioned lights out, which allows the use of weapons. That's basically like their extreme rules match. And exploding barbed wire death matches. I hope it works out better in the game than it did in reality. But you will be able to have an exploding barbed wire death match in the game. Now, the gameplay that I've seen, and it's been very limited, I know that they were teasing a gameplay trailer. I know it got leaked. One of the companies leaked it early. The video with Tony Schiavone and Britt Baker in her hotel room. Oh, get your mind out of the gutter. They were in her hotel room playing the game. I'm watching the gameplay, and it does. I agree with a lot of the people who have said that it reminds me of the old WWF No Mercy game. And one of the strong points of this game is said to be how easy the controls are to use. But until people are able to go hands-on with it, we don't know exactly how the game is going to play. I am sure that I'll end up buying it for PC. I assume it'll end up on Steam. So I can do some Sound Off Gamer videos. That'll be the next installment of Sound Off Gamer. Once we are done with 2K22, we'll move on to Fight Forever. Speaking of which, I have to record the next My Rise Sound Off Gamer very soon. That'll be coming up soon. I think 2K22 is actually a lot of fun. I know people shat all over 2K20. The whole thing was a disaster. I think 2K22 is actually a pretty fun game. So this game, I'm not expecting it to be as in-depth. It's not going to have, I think, as much content as 2K22 does. WWE's been coming out with games almost every year now for however many years. This is their first console game. So I think people need to temper their expectations as far as exactly how much the game is going to offer. But I think if you have a game that looks good, graphics aren't the end-all be-all for everybody. But if it looks good, if it plays good, I think it comes down to gameplay more than anything else. If it's easy to play, if it's fun to play, people will play. If the controls suck or if the controls are hard to navigate, that's going to be a big negative on the game. So let's talk about Dynamite. The show opened tonight with Orange Cassidy against Jay Lethal, fresh off two straight losses. First, he lost to Samoa Joe at Death Before Dishonor. And then he went to Ric Flair's final match on Sunday. He was in the main event. And he lost. He and Jeff Jarrett lost to Ric Flair and Andrade. So he was trying to get a win here. Satnam Singh was ringside in Lethal's corner with Sanjay Dutt. Even though Excalibur said that Satnam Singh was banned from ringside, apparently he didn't get the memo. Best Friends walked out from one of the entrance tunnels with Chuck holding Trent on his shoulders. They had a long trench coat on. So at first, the trench coat was closed, got tongue-tied there. You couldn't see Chuck, so it looked like Trent was 10 feet tall. And he's pointing at Satnam Singh. Singh's not backing down. Trent now is getting nervous. And then all of a sudden, Chuck's head pops out from the jacket, so you could see Chuck under the coat. Sanjay was holding back Satnam Singh, although I don't know why. I don't know why he wouldn't have let this guy just pulverize these two, but he was holding him back. Before the first picture-in-picture, Lethal drop-kicked Cassidy's leg into the ring steps. He was trying to break his ankle. Back from the break, Lethal was still in control. He climbed up to the top rope. He was setting up for the Randy Savage elbow. And Orange Cassidy did the slow roll into the opposite corner, which popped the crowd. Lethal jumped down. He went to go after him, but Cassidy pulled him into the middle turnbuckle. Cassidy followed up with a diving DDT off the ropes, followed by a tilt-a-whirl DDT. Cassidy tried for the orange punch, but his leg gave out. He collapsed. Lethal got all cocky, and he started setting up for what looked like a powerbomb or maybe a pile driver. Cassidy, though, countered into the beach break. That was not enough. He tried again for the orange punch, but Lethal took out his knee and followed that up with the Lethal injection for the win. So the losing streak is over. Jay Lethal actually won a match on television tonight. Hallelujah. Sanjay and Satnam Singh, they came back out, got into the ring after the match, and Lethal got on the mic. He told Wardlow to come out. And he told Wardlow to come out because he was going to put the figure four on Orange Cassidy and break his leg. This is all because Wardlow came out on Rampage last Friday. I didn't get a chance to review the show. We were talking about SummerSlam and predictions and all that, but Wardlow had come out to confront Lethal and his crew after they had a trios match with Best Friends. So he went to go put the figure four on Cassidy. Best Friends ran out, and right behind them, here comes Wardlow with the TNT title. He gets into the ring. The heels bailed. Sanjay challenged Wardlow to put his TNT championship on the line against Lethal at Battle of the Belts 3. This Saturday, I had completely forgotten that Battle of the Belts was this weekend. I thought, man, we got an open weekend. It's going to finally be a quiet weekend. And then they say that we got Battle of the Belts on Saturday. So much for that. Wardlow said that it doesn't matter what day, what time, what city. He said the end result is the same. Wardlow's going to whoop that ass. Everybody cheered for Wardlow. At least Wardlow's on TV. He needs to be on television every single week, whooping that ass, because as white hot as he was only a few weeks ago, he feels like he's cooled off. Now, when he's on television, people go crazy for him, so it's not like they're sitting on their hands, but he just needs to be getting more reps on TV, especially because he's the TNT champion. I'd be saying that anyway, just because he's one of the most over baby faces they have, but he is the TNT champion. He should be on the show every week. So he'll be defending on Battle of the Belts this Saturday, which they are taping on Friday because we have a rare live Rampage on Friday, and so they'll tape that show right after. So the Undisputed Elite were advertised for this show for some kind of a special segment. They were out next. First time that we've seen Adam Cole and Kyle O'Reilly in a while since they've been hurt. Bobby Fish, also, we haven't seen him on TV. So it was Cole, O'Reilly, Fish, and the Young Bucks coming down to the ring. Adam Cole said that he and Kyle were still not medically cleared. In the meantime, he's been thinking about what he can do to help the Undisputed Elite. He said that loyalty is essential. In fact, he came to AEW out of loyalty to the Young Bucks. He said loyalty is everything. He said that brings him to this Trios tournament. They announced last week they're finally introducing Trios championships. They're going to have a tournament. The finals are going to be held in Chicago at All Out. He said that there was nothing he wanted more than for the Undisputed Elite to win the tournament, but since he and Kyle are not cleared, and they aren't choosing Bobby Fish for their partner, he said the Bucks simply would not be able to compete in the tournament. They're going to have to sit it out. And then he clarified that he wasn't using his words correctly. He said that they would not physically be capable. And at that moment, O'Reilly, Fish, they attacked the Bucks. They attacked them from behind. They laid out Nick Jackson. They laid out Matt Jackson. Bobby Fish trapped Matt's arm in a chair. Cole climbed to the second rope to stomp on it when Hangman Page's music played. And out comes the Cowboy. He ran to the ring carrying a lead pipe. He nearly face planted in the ring when he slid in. For whatever reason, he had butterflies embroidered on his jeans. I don't know how many of you noticed that, but he was wearing, I guess you would call them butterfly jeans, I guess. Cole, Fish, and O'Reilly fled, and then Page turned around. He made eye contact with the Bucks. He pulled Matt Jackson to his feet, and then quickly turned around and left with the announcers, wondering if this meant that the three of them were back together and if the three of them would be a team in this tournament. There was one young child. I know some of you saw this. There was one young child in the crowd who was so traumatized when Cole and Red Dragon turned against the Bucks, and Adam Cole, I think he super kicked Matt Jackson and he was beating him down. He was yelling at him and taunting him. This kid was hysterical. There he is. There he is on screen. It is still very real to that little guy. See, you know that you have done something right when you can make little kids cry. Adam Cole made that little kid cry. Look at this kid. He's hysterical. All because of Adam Cole. But it's all good. It's all good. We now know that the kid's name is Sawyer. And Sawyer, according to his father on Twitter, there he is. Sawyer is doing a lot better after he saw Hangman come out to save the Young Bucks. So young Sawyer is now a meme on social media. But this was a big twist. This was actually a major angle that they shot here tonight, especially with Kenny Omega presumably on his way back soon. And how soon is soon? We still don't know. Are we talking a couple of months? Are we talking a matter of weeks? He's a lot closer to returning now than he was 6 months ago. So I don't know if... Again, his return is necessarily imminent before All Out, but, you know, we're looking, I think, at Hangman and the Bucks very likely going after the Trios titles, or is that the backup plan? And they're still hoping that Kenny Omega might be back in time to compete at All Out. It is possible that Omega could be back in time. Tony Khan was holding off on introducing Trios titles until Kenny Omega was back. So he must think that Kenny Omega is back, you know, on his way back very soon. Is that going to be in these next few weeks? Because this tournament is going to start, and they didn't announce anything tonight. For Friday, for Saturday, for Dynamite next week, there was no announcement made of the beginning of the Trios tournament. So I don't know how big this tournament is going to be, but if they're starting it on TV, the finals are at All Out. Well, All Out, you know, it's August 3rd. All Out is September 4th. So we are a month away. So that tournament is going to be kicking off very soon. The way they're teasing it, it looks like it'll be Hangman and the Bucks linking up as a team. Cole and Red Dragon as well, but maybe what Cole said in the ring tonight is legit. You know, maybe he is not medically cleared, and if they don't think that he and Kyle O'Reilly are going to be medically cleared in time, it's possible they won't be able to be in the tournament. tonight could have been a red herring to kind of throw us off, and maybe they will be in there, but they are legitimately not medically cleared. If you watch tonight, they didn't take any bumps, but they did get physical. If this was WWE, they would never have even been allowed in the ring to do anything physical. But that's how WWE runs. So they didn't take bumps, but they did do some physical stuff in the ring, so I don't know if they'll be back in time or not. Question is, the bigger question coming out of this angle, where does Kenny Omega fit in all of this? Where is he going to fit when he comes back? The last time we saw Kenny Omega, he had Don Callis with him. He was the heel. Does Omega not come back with Don Callis? Is Callis done? Is Kenny just going to come back and be a babyface automatically? Because I would think when he comes back, you slot him in the babyface position. I mean, that's just what would make sense to me. You could have a big reunion with him and Hangman and the Bucks all back together. You could even set it for a big match. You know, it's almost too bad that Roderick Strong is still tied down to a long-term deal with WWE. Now, he has been said for a long time now that he is very unhappy. He's been trying to get out of his deal. He has wanted to leave NXT. He has wanted to leave the company. And it's too bad that they don't have him available, because you could just bring him in, plug him in with Cole, Fish, and O'Reilly. You get the whole Undisputed Era back together. And you could do Cole, Strong, Fish, and O'Reilly against Omega, Hangman, and the Bucks. You know, it's a natural four-way feud. But again, I believe he's under a long-term deal, and with Triple H now ascending to the throne on the main roster, I would have to think that that bodes well for Roderick Strong. You know, possibly even getting a main roster call-up. You know, he's a Triple H guy. Triple H is in power. Maybe Roddy now will have a change in attitude. Maybe he won't want to leave. You know, he might want to stay right where he is. But that's the big question. When Kenny Omega comes back, is he a babyface or is he a heel? Who does he align with? They were already teasing something down the road right before he left with him and Adam Cole. So it has to be babyface. He comes back, he feuds with Cole. That would be the natural direction. When we'll see him back on TV, though, we don't know. We got a Jon Moxley promo in the back. He said the last survivor of the Heart Dungeon, Chris Jericho, and the newest member of the Blackpool Combat Club, that being Wheeler Yuta, face each other later tonight for a shot at him next week. Moxley said that he honestly didn't care who it was. He didn't care because he doesn't have any respect for anybody once he gets into the ring. He said he won't stop in the ring until someone goes to the hospital, even if that's him. He vowed to make the Heart Dungeon look like daycare. He said whoever it is better be ready next week because this is his life, and when you step into the ring with him, it is not a game. I thought that this was great stuff from Moxley. He just has that authenticity on his promos that not everybody has. Very few people have that level of authenticity. You know, Eddie Kingston is somebody who has that. But very few people do. Nobody is better at being Jon Moxley than Jon Moxley. He's a weird guy. You know, he's not like a lot of other people in terms of his delivery and just his overall behavior. And when you see him out there, he's a weird fucking guy. But when he's able to go and cut, you know, a passionate promo like this, again, there's a certain genuine feel to it that I think more wrestlers should have in their promo. So I enjoyed this. I thought this was good. Earlier in the day, Tony Schiavone was catching up backstage with Christian Cage out in the parking lot, parking garage area. He said Jungle Boy was raised by terrible human beings. Christian said this, not Tony. I don't want to make it sound like Tony Schiavone said that. Christian said that. All of a sudden, we hear a car screeching into the parking garage, trying to run these guys over. This big SUV just comes barreling in, and out from the driver's side door, we see Jungle Boy. He tried to pull a Rikishi. He almost pulled a Rikishi on Christian and Tony Schiavone here. Security immediately swarmed him. Excalibur on commentary said that he wasn't even scheduled to be here tonight. And presumably, security then escorted him off the premises, but as we would soon find out, they didn't do a very good job. We have Thunderstorm, Thunder Rosa, and Toni Storm taking on Dr. Britt Baker, DMD, and Jamie Hayter. And it was during this match, I got to give a shout out to one of our loyal Sound Off listeners. Shout out to Brock Benningfield for showing some love to the podcast. I saw it a few times during the show, but I grabbed that screenshot. Shout out, by the way, to the fine person who sent me that screenshot. Sound Off was represented in Columbus tonight. I always tell people, you're going to bring a sign, you got to do it in like neon green. It'll stand out more. Word to the wise, whether it's green or yellow with black writing, whatever it may be, always go for those bright colors. They'll stand out more. There it is. So my thanks to Brock for repping the show here tonight. The second best sign in the crowd during this match said, "Britt, have my baby." That was the second best sign. So after a break, Thunderstorm went for a double suplex. Jamie Hayter countered it and tagged out to Britt Baker. They went for a double team move. Rebel hopped up on the apron and distracted Toni Storm. It was Storm and Thunder Rosa who, again, were trying for a double team move. And Rebel gets up on the apron to distract Storm. That allowed Britt Baker to dispatch Thunder Rosa. Baker dropped Toni Storm from the middle rope on the inside with an avalanche air raid crash and made the tag to Jamie Hayter, who came in, caught Toni with a sliding lariat, and Britt caught Toni with a curb stomp. She told Jamie, "Cover her, go cover her." But Thunder Rosa broke up the pin at the last second with a drop kick to the back. We got a face off with Britt Baker and Thunder Rosa, old rivals face to face. After a series of reversals, Britt caught her with a standing air raid crash. Storm caught Britt with a spinning DDT, but then Jamie Hayter caught Toni Storm with a Uranage backbreaker across the knee. Thunderstorm hit simultaneous Germans before Toni hit repeated hip attacks on opposite ends of the corner. She was wrecking these women with these hip attacks. And on the last one, Britt Baker moved out of the way, and Toni accidentally hit Thunder Rosa with a hip attack. And that led to Jamie Hayter short arm clotheslining Toni Storm, pinning her for the win. I thought these four ladies went out there and they had a hell of a match. This was a physical match. They were laying their shit in. I don't know how they don't get whiplash on those Toni Storm hip checks in the corner. Maybe they do. I mean, it looks fucking brutal. Maybe it's the camera angle. You see the way their head whips back. She comes in full force. I don't know how their head doesn't just bounce into the fifth row. It looks great, though. But I thought they were all four of them. I thought they were in top form tonight. This was great stuff. And I would say that, for my money, this was the best match on the show. Where are we? We were up to 250 likes, according to Beowulf. That's it. We can do better. We can do better. I was wondering how long it would take for me to see the cake emojis in the chat here. Always around this time, we end up with the cake emojis. Funny how that, or the peaches. Yeah, there's the peach. Oh, you guys are too much. So we got a video package showing Ty Conti and Sammy Guevara. I think they were in France, right? Weren't they showing the Eiffel Tower or something? So they were on vacation somewhere. They were not at Dynamite this week because they were getting married. So in the middle of this video package, though, we cut back to the building. In the back, Eddie Kingston is standing there, and he's cutting it off, saying, "Enough of this crap, turn this shit off." And he said nobody cares about this wedding. He demanded that Sammy Guevara sign a contract for a match with him at All Out. That was basically it. So we're going to get Eddie Kingston against Sammy Guevara in Chicago. We had another video package recapping the angle from last week where Powerhouse Hobbs turned on Ricky Starks. They cut back to a shot of Taz at the announce desk, and they zoomed in on Taz. And Taz clarified that he had no idea what was going to happen last week. He had no idea that Hook was going to come out to challenge Ricky Starks for the TNT or for the FTW title. He had no idea that Hobbs was going to turn on Ricky the way he did. Nobody clued him in about any of this. And he said that officially, Team Taz is no more. Team Taz is dead. He wished all of the members nothing but the best. He knows they're all going to kill it on their own. They're going to be fine. He wishes them all the best, but Team Taz is done. So Taz, he put the final nail in the coffin, but you and I both know Team Taz has been dead now for months. Team Taz has been a tag team. It's been Ricky Starks and Powerhouse Hobbs. And up until recently, we barely saw them on television. We barely saw them on Dynamite or Rampage. Recently, we started to see them a little bit more. Team Taz has not been a thing, though, for a while. Ever since Hook started going off on his own, doing his own thing. So, I mean, he made it official, but let's be honest. Team Taz has been the Walking Dead now for quite some time. So Will Hobbs was out next for a quick squash over Ren Jones. I have not heard of Ren Jones before, but he did not last very long in this match. Hobbs murdered this man with an Oklahoma Stampede. Ricky Starks ran out after the match. He attacked Hobbs. Hobbs, though, caught him with a great spine buster and left him laying. The place erupted for Starks when he ran to the ring. This was a hot angle. And I mean, the post-match didn't last very long. This was 30 seconds, maybe. But the people were hot for it. I'm telling you, Ricky Starks, I know I'm not going out on too much of a limb by saying this, but Ricky Starks is going to be a top babyface in this company. It won't take very long. So long as Tony Khan knows what he's doing and actually features him on the show, Tony Khan has a future top babyface in Ricky Starks. Play your cards right, that's what he could be for you. But I also loved how they made Hobbs out to be a monster heel. You know, the way he wrecked that guy in 30 seconds, and even the way he put down Starks with that spine buster, he looked like a fucking beast out. We got a Miro video package where he addressed the House of Black. And he brought up a visitor that had been talking to him. And he referenced this visitor as a she. And said that she had been telling him things. He said everybody reveals themselves and soon the Redeemer will too. And, of course, the first thing you think of, he's mentioning a she. Does that mean that Lana is on her way to AEW? People have been saying that for a while now. Lana's going to be coming into AEW. He's going to bring in, he keeps talking about his hot wife and how flexible his hot wife is and all these references to his wife. And he hasn't really referenced her in a while, but this talk of she is going to get people talking about Lana again. I could take it or leave it. Lana and Rusev on TV, when they were doing the initial gimmick in WWE, they were a great combo. They were a great pair on TV. And then Lana went off on her own and tried to be a wrestler, and that was just a fucking disaster. So I have no interest in seeing Lana coming to AEW and being a part of the women's division. But Lana and Miro together as a combo on screen could definitely work. I just don't really have any interest in seeing her in the ring. So if they could have that separation, then I'm okay with it. But I don't think that she is necessarily what that women's division needs. If that's what this is in reference to, and again, I don't know if it is or not. But they shot this in such a way where we couldn't see the left side of his face. The left side of his, he was like in a dark room, and we could only see like the right side of his face. His left eye, for example, we couldn't see it. Now, he was misted in the face by Malakai Black, so I don't know, maybe the next time we see him, if he'll have some kind of black makeup that gets bigger and bigger like it did with Julia Hart. They did that makeup on Julia Hart's face and whatever that thing was, you know, kept getting bigger and bigger until finally she turned heel and it consumed her. I don't see Miro going heel again so soon after he just came back. I don't see him joining the House of Black unless it's all part of a setup or something. But very interesting that they did not show us what the other half of his face looked like. We had a Darby Allin promo, pre-recorded promo, where he said that he was the one who got Brody King hired in AEW in the first place. And then they showed highlights of Brody King beating the fuck out of this guy. For weeks now, he has been destroying Darby Allin. Not just in AEW, but at signings, at Comic-Con. He is beating the hell out of this guy, no matter where he is. And as he was talking, you could hear a tattoo gun, what sounded like a tattoo gun, buzzing in the background. Darby told Brody that he asked for this match, this coffin match. And next week, his hand would be the last thing that he saw before he closed the coffin, and then he opened his hand up, and he revealed that he was getting a tattoo on his hand that said, "The coffin drops on Brody King." So that match is going to be coming up next week. They were back to introducing Jim Ross at the midway point in the show. Last week, Jim Ross was on commentary for the entire thing. Tonight, they introduced him at the start of the second hour, out just in time for the match between Matt Hardy and Christian Cage. This was the night of great signs. Not only do we have a Solid Monster sign in the crowd tonight, we had that Britt Baker sign I mentioned. Someone held up a sign during this match that said, "I played this match on No Mercy." I love it. I did pop when I saw that. So Matt avoided Christian's drop-down right hand. He hit a side effect for a near fall. He followed that up with a second one on the ring apron. Hardy then grabbed the timekeeper's table, and he pulled it over and laid Christian across the table. He climbed back up on the apron, and he came off with a diving elbow. Unfortunately for him, Christian moved out of the way, and Matt crashed through the table. After that, he put Hardy back in the ring, hit the kill switch, and won the match. So it's a win for Christian Cage. After the match, Christian went outside. He grabbed two chairs. He was going to set up for the one-man concerto, just like he did to Jungle Boy. Luchasaurus Black. I still call him Luchasaurus Black, like Pentagon Black or Pentagon Dark from Lucha Underground. Because he's coming out to his heel music, and he still has the black mask. So here comes Luchasaurus, and he gets maybe halfway down the ramp. But it was all a setup, because out from the crowd with a chair in hand, or actually he didn't have it, he grabbed the chair once he was in the ring, but out from the crowd comes Jungle Boy, so I don't know, I mean those security guards apparently didn't do a very good job, since he's not supposed to be in the building. But he snuck up from behind Christian, he grabbed one of the chairs, Christian ran away through the crowd, and Jungle Boy stared him down from the ring. Jungle Boy was wearing a plain black shirt that said, "Christian is a pussy." They need to get that in Shop AEW right away. They will sell a bunch of those shirts if they put them up, I guarantee it. "Christian is a pussy." Tony Schiavone was shown backstage. He was with Daniel Garcia, called himself the Dragon Slayer for forcing Bryan Danielson to submit in the main event last week on Dynamite. And yes, Miguel, that is true. Naomichi Marufuji is coming to House of Glory at the end of this month. It is a stacked card. I don't know what he's doing yet. We have not made that announcement. But yes, Marufuji is coming to Hog. So Garcia called himself the Dragon Slayer. He told Danielson that when his head feels better and he's ready to come back, he can get back in the ring with him so that he can slay the dragon again. We had a video package that recapped Pac defending his All-Atlantic Championship. This time it was against Connor Mills. They aired this on Dark. I've been enjoying this whole situation with Pac where they've had him defending his title overseas and they have the footage and then they air it on Dark. And I like that. He's like the traveling champion. He's going around, beating people from all different promotions. So I've been enjoying that. But this time they show Kip Sabian in the crowd. He had the cardboard box on his head. And they made reference to the fact that it is Kip Sabian. And apparently the angle is that he has been following Pac around everywhere. So this seems to be building to a Kip Sabian in-ring return where he'll be challenging Pac soon, I imagine, for the All-Atlantic title. We came back live. Ethan Page was in the ring with a mic. He wanted to know why he is not on television every single week. How many other people in the back do you think were living vicariously through him in this moment, wondering the same fucking thing, right? They're like, yeah, what about us too? So he was very frustrated. He says he thinks he deserves better. As he's ranting, he's doing this like work shoot. They cut to show Stokely Hathaway walking down to the ring, and he gets into the ring. And he was in the ring for about 30 seconds before Ethan Page even knew he was there. He turned around. He saw Hathaway. He wanted to know what he's doing there. Hathaway asked him, "What are you doing?" And then he whispered something in his ear. And he passed his business card to him, and that was the end of the segment. So it appears that this whole Men of the Year thing with Ethan Page and Scorpio Sky and Dan Lambert, we haven't seen Dan Lambert on TV in a while, which I'm okay with. I'm okay with them splitting Ethan Page away from that and doing something else with him. Ethan Page is very good. Ethan Page is somebody who should be frustrated by the fact that he is not being featured on television. Stokely Hathaway, I like that he's just going around handing his card out to everybody. He did it with Lee Moriarty, right? Obviously, he's got Jade Cargill and her crew. And so they're building this whole enterprise around Hathaway. And Stokely Hathaway is awesome. He's great. I was very happy when he signed with AEW and he showed up. So if they want to build a whole faction around him, I have no issue with that. He was the best part of Diamond Mine. Diamond Mine started to go to shit when he left. He was the glue that held Diamond Mine together. But no, Stokely is great. And if they want to build a whole faction around him beyond Jade Cargill, I have no problem with that. Tony Schiavone was in the back with Matt Menard, Angelo Parker, and Anna Jay. And Menard said that Chris Jericho becoming a two-time AEW world champion, just the thought of it makes his nipples hard. Parker said that it was time the AEW Galaxy appreciated them, right? Because they're sports entertainers after all. So then they threw it to Anna Jay, and she's still doing this whole thing where she gets angry and she says, I'll choke you out, I'll choke you out, I'll choke you out. And she walked off camera. And then they turn the camera and we see that she has a stagehand or one of the backstage workers on the ground in her Queenslayer sleeper. They're trying to get her over as some kind of a badass. It's not working. It's just not working. So all you need is just, you know, she just has to come out and she can interfere in matches and she can wrestle her own matches and just be kind of the cool blonde in the group. They're trying to turn her into a badass, but she just hasn't been able to convince me. I just look at that when I see her doing that to somebody, and I'm just kind of laughing, like, come on. Come on. Just, it doesn't work. It doesn't fit her personality. We had the Acclaimed against the Gun Club in a dumpster match. Billy Gunn, someone who is very familiar with dumpster matches. He had one at a WrestleMania many years ago, over 20 years ago, in fact. That is not the last, little trivia note for you, that is not the last dumpster match that we saw. The last dumpster match that we had, at least in WWE, was actually 5 years ago. It was on Monday Night Raw between Braun Strowman and Kalisto. But the more well-known dumpster match, the first one they ever did was back at WrestleMania, with the New Age Outlaws, Cactus Jack, and Terry Funk. So the Acclaimed attacked Billy Gunn on the stage during Gun Club's entrance. They threw him into the side of the dumpster that was sitting on stage. The Gunn Sons came out of the ring after them. They got taken out. None of this stopped Max Caster from making sure that he got his rap in. People were very upset. They thought they weren't going to get a Max Caster rap. They thought they were going right into the match. So when he said, I'm going to do my rap, everybody got excited. And I didn't make note of all the lines, but the main line in there was, no filter, we ain't Instagram, we'll make the ass boys retire like Vince McMahon. And everybody reacted to the line. That was the big climactic line of the rap. So, skipping ahead here, for the finish, Caster snuck up behind Austin Gunn, who was on top of the left entrance tunnel. So, Austin Gunn had climbed up top, had no idea that Max Caster had climbed up behind him. Now he doesn't see that Max Caster is standing right behind him. And finally he realizes it, and Caster grabs him, and he tosses him off, and it was a very safe, I mean, he basically just jumped off into the dumpster down below. So now he's in the dumpster. Now Caster is still up on top. Anthony Bowens places the other ass boy, Colton Gunn, he lays him out across a table that was set up on stage right next to where the dumpster is. So now Colton Gunn is laying on this table. And I'm watching Max Caster on top because he's trying to navigate his way to the edge and see, okay, from the distance of the table, how far do I have to go? And you could see him just looking down. He just mouths the word fuck. Because he's got to jump, right? He can't just climb down, even if the distance were to be too much, he's got to jump. Otherwise, you look like a puss. So he did the jump. It was fine. He did the mic check elbow off the top of the entrance tunnel, crashed through the table. They put Colton Gunn into the dumpster. They closed the lid so the Acclaim get the win. After the match, they zip-tied the dumpster shut, or they tried to. Those zip ties didn't do shit, but they were trying to zip-tie it shut. And Bowen signaled that they wanted to push the dumpster off the stage, which was a nod to the angle that we saw on Raw many years ago. It was back in 98 in the build-up to WrestleMania where they pushed the dumpster off. Now, this is back when Monday Night Raw, I mean, when that stage was, I mean, it may not have been 10 feet, but they had those high stages back then. Not like these days, the stage, they don't even have stages on Raw anymore. But when they did in recent years, the stage was like 2 feet off the ground. And I would always laugh when somebody got, like, thrown off onto the ground. I'm like, dude, you went 2 feet. Back then, the stages were a lot higher. And the angle back in 98 was the New Age Outlaws, they got a head start, and they pushed the dumpster off. And the dumpster went off the edge, and Jim Ross was on commentary that night as well. And he lost his mind. And they really sold that angle like it was a major angle. It wasn't played up for comedy. It wasn't like they popped up out of the thing, and it wasn't like a jokey thing. They were trying to make it very real and somber, and oh my God, what happened? Are they going to survive? I remember Sonny was out there. Like, wrestlers came out to check on them. They were going to, you know, load them in the ambulance and take them to the hospital. And Jim Ross on commentary did a hell of a job. I mean, he was like, you know, you would think that these guys were just evil incarnate, you know, the way that he was going off on them when they did that angle. But the thing I remember most about that is how they ruined it. Russo ruined the fucking angle at the end of the show. Because instead of just leaving well enough alone and having him off TV for a week or two after that and letting people wonder if they were going to be okay, they came back at the very end of the show. I think they were in hospital gowns. They were attached to the IV pole coming down to their... It was completely ridiculous. They ruined the whole fucking angle at the end of the show. But still to this day, that angle stands out to me in my head. So they did the same thing here. They had a hell of a time. They had a bitch of a time, though, trying to get the dumpster positioned. The dumpster was not cooperating with them. But eventually, they did finally roll it off the stage, and it took a header, and it did a complete flip, and it landed on its opposite end, like a 180. And styrofoam and all kinds of, like, confetti or whatever it was. It was like styrofoam and cardboard and stuff just flying out of it. So anyway, I thought this was a fun little match. It was a much needed win for the Acclaimed. I've talked about how the Acclaimed are just losers. They were always booked like losers. People were into them, but whether it was a tag match or a singles match, and it was Bowens before the knee injury more than Caster was really getting a lot of singles matches, and they were just losing all the time. The Acclaimed are very over. The Acclaimed should be primed for an eventual shot at the AEW tag team titles. And that'll be months from now. But before you get there, they need to start winning matches. So even something like this, you might look at this and go, whatever, you know, what was the purpose of any of this? Well, first of all, this was a match with a purpose. I mean, this is an angle that has been playing itself out now for months. This was the payoff. This was it. This is how you blow this off. But the other purpose it served was to give the Acclaimed a win, which they haven't been getting very many of them. So I thought this was fun. I like this. Main event on this show is Chris Jericho taking on Wheeler Yuta. If Yuta beats Jericho, he would get the championship match next week against Jon Moxley. I mean, we all knew exactly how this was going to go. This was the most predictable. I mean, outside, I guess, of the Hobbs squash, this was the most predictable match of the entire night. Before the match got started, Claudio Castagnoli made his way out to back up Wheeler Yuta against 2.0. 2.0 had come out to the ring to be in Jericho's corner. So Claudio made his presence felt. Angelo Parker grabbed at Yuta's boot early on. That led to 2.0 being ejected by Aubrey Edwards. And Claudio left after that. I don't even think he was ejected. I think he was just like, okay, well, if they're not here, then I don't need to be here. That's right. We actually had a Bully Ray sighting on our television screen. They showed highlights from that battle royal, that bunkhouse stampede battle, or the bunkhouse battle royal at the Ric Flair's last match pay-per-view on Sunday, which I covered elsewhere on the channel. A full review, well over 30,000 views, more than I thought it would get, if you want my full thoughts on that. But they actually were showing highlights, and I'll tell you why here in a second, from the pre-show battle royal. And I'm looking up because I'm trying to get my notes finalized here before we go live tonight. And I look up and I'm like, fucking Bully Ray on my television screen. I said, I better get a Bully the Clown super chat tonight. The fact that he popped up on my TV is something I was not expecting. So thank you to JM for that. It was JM, right? Of course. JM loves it. JM loves that super chat. So after the final break, Yuta hit four consecutive German suplexes. He bridged for a near fall. Jericho came back, locked on the walls of Jericho. That forced Yuta to crawl his way to the ropes. Yuta sent Jericho to the floor and hit three consecutive suicide dives. Back inside, he landed a diving crossbody for two. Jericho caught Yuta in midair, coming off the top with a code breaker. Went for the cover, but Yuta kicked out at 2.5. Yuta applied a Regal stretch, and William Regal was on commentary, and he mentioned that. That's my move. That's my finish. He put the Regal stretch on, but Jericho reached and grabbed the hold of Floyd the baseball bat in the corner. Aubrey Edwards took the bat away from him, and while she was briefly distracted and went to go put the bat out of the ring, Jericho kicked Yuta low. He went for the Judas effect, but he missed. Yuta tried for the seatbelt move that he does. Jericho kicked out of it and locked on the old school lion tamer. I love me some old school lion tamer. It looks great when he wrenches back. He used to put that move on Rey Mysterio. And Rey Mysterio was so tiny and bendy. It just looked fucking great every time he would do it. So I always love it when he busts out the old school lion tamer. I'm sure there were plenty of main eventers in WWE who did not want to take the move, which is why he had to adapt the move. And that's how we ended up with the Walls of Jericho. I can't imagine someone like Steve Austin, for example, or a Triple H would be very amenable to taking the lion tamer and having Jericho stick his knee in their neck. So anyway, he gets the submission win. He would not let go of the hold, though. He kept it applied. He would not release the hold. They play John Moxley's music, and he's coming through the crowd. So Wheeler Yuta now must be thinking to himself, this fucking guy, if he would just make a normal entrance and come down the aisle like everybody else, he would help me get out of this predicament here. But he's got to wait, because Moxley's got to make his way through the crowd. So Jericho kept the move applied. He kept the hold locked in until Moxley finally hit the ring, and then Jericho let go, and he bailed out to the floor. So Jericho got on the mic. He said Moxley just unleashed the demon. He opened Pandora's box. Next week, you want the last survivor of the Heart Dungeon? Says, you want Lionheart Chris Jericho? You got it. But I'm going to stretch the shit out of you and walk out the new AEW World Champion. I thought it was a good main event. I like the finish. But a good main event. And after next week, I figured they move away from Jericho and they move on to CM Punk. I have a feeling that CM Punk is going to be back in time for All Out. Wasn't a very positive update that he gave at Comic-Con. It's a very serious injury. He's had to relearn how to walk. His foot was shattered. But I think the fact that they're doing this match on TV next week, and there's no need. I mean, look, there could be some kind of a schmoz or a non-finish that leads to a gimmick rematch. Jericho Moxley 2 at All Out. That would be lame. This needs to end next week. And after this ends, the only person who makes sense in this spot is CM Punk. So I think that they know that Punk is probably going to be able to make it back in time. That's my guess. And then the build will begin to champion against champion, title for title in Chicago. It'll be a huge blow if they can't get Punk back. That'll be the second Chicago pay-per-view in a row if they're not able to get Punk back. And they really can't move on until Punk comes back. And as far as the MJF stuff is concerned, I think that's part of why they're waiting to bring him back to TV, not just for the fall TV season, which is very important for them, but they need CM Punk back first. So that's what I think is going to come out of this next week. So Rampage, I mentioned earlier, is going to be live this Friday, a rare live Rampage. They have Jon Moxley on the show. Jon Moxley is going to be wrestling Mance Warner. Some of you might be wondering who? If you only follow AEW or AEW and WWE, you may not know Mance Warner. Mance Warner is the one who won the Bunkhouse Battle Royal on the Ric Flair pay-per-view on Sunday. And they're bringing in Mance Warner, and he's going to wrestle the world champion in a world title eliminator, where if he beats Jon Moxley, he will get a shot at the AEW interim world title. Madison Rayne is going to make her in-ring debut. She is now officially working for the company as a coach, so doesn't surprise me that she'll be doing some wrestling as well. Mrs. Josh Matthews is going to be on Rampage this Friday. And Keith Lee and Swerve Strickland will take on Tony Nese and Josh Woods in a Friday night street fight. Battle of the Belts is being taped on Friday night. It's not going to air until Saturday on TNT, 8 p.m. start time. Claudio is going to defend his Ring of Honor World Championship against Konosuke Takeshita. That is a match I am very much looking forward to. Takeshita and Claudio. We're not going to have a title change, of course, but I think that's going to be a hell of a fucking match. Thunder Rosa defends her AEW Women's Championship against Jamie Hayter. And Wardlow will defend the TNT Championship against Jay Lethal. Next Wednesday, Dynamite is the Quake by the Lake episode. They've got Darby Allin against Brody King in a coffin match. Lucha Brothers take on Andrade and Rush in a tornado tag team match. Jade Cargill will have an open challenge for the TBS Championship. And Jon Moxley will wrestle Chris Jericho for the AEW Interim World title. So, a lot of shit planned for the next week. I am not going to go live after Battle of the Belts. We'll just talk about that on the podcast on Sunday. But I will be live on Friday night. We'll talk SmackDown and we'll talk Rampage. Let's take a look at the Twitter poll on what you thought of Dynamite tonight with nearing 800 votes in so far. 75% of you have given this show a thumbs up. 14% thumbs in the middle, and roughly 11% of you said tonight's show is a thumbs down show. I don't know what you were watching. This was a thumbs in the middle or thumbs up. I don't see how you can find this a thumbs down tonight. But that's the beauty of the poll. Everyone's got an opinion. So let yours be heard. At Solomonster on Twitter, and you can go vote. You don't even have to be 18. There's no restrictions. That little kid, Sawyer, who was crying his eyes out early, he was bawling his eyes out. He could vote. He could vote in the poll. He would probably give the show a thumbs down after what Adam Cole did to poor Matt Jackson. All right, let's take a look at your super chats. You can get them on in if you want to show your support. You want to ask a question in the process, you don't have to. You can drop a super chat or you can drop a super chat and a question. We always try to get to everybody here. EJ Slemp with the $4.99. We lost the GOAT last night in honor of Vin Scully. Here is his best call. Behind the bag, gets through Buckner, here comes Knight, and the Mets win it. Oh, you can say that again. What was that? Here comes Knight, and the Mets win it. That is one of the all-time great calls. Well done, EJ, well done. That is a great call. Food Hive with the $4.99. Whoever made the sign that said, I played this match on No Mercy during the Christian Matt Hardy match, is a legend. What an effing sign. I said I popped when I saw it. Quintus Brown, great show tonight. It has been a fun week of wrestling. If both TK and Triple H can keep this up, then we are all in for an exciting fall season of wrestling. Chris Smith, $9.99. In your opinion, who are some underrated wrestlers in AEW? Do I have two songs? Ah, I had double the fun there. I had two songs playing at once. That's when Solomonster hits the club. He's got all kinds of music playing. So Christopher wants to know who I think is underrated in AEW. Ricky Starks has been, Ricky Starks hasn't been underrated. Ricky Starks has been underutilized. I think of people like Hobbs and Starks, Swerve, who now, is one half of the tag team champions. They're not really underrated. Who would I consider to be underrated from the AEW roster? Somebody who doesn't really get talked about enough. It's tough because I think a lot of the people that are on that undercard especially get a lot of love from people, and the people who don't, I don't know that I would call them underrated. I don't know. I feel like everybody is properly, I think, respected for the ability that they have. It's just, it's more a question of, are they featured enough? I think the easier question would be to say who's underutilized or isn't featured as much as they should be. And then you can rattle off a whole list of names. Even someone like tonight, we had the segment with Ethan Page who came out. It's all part of an angle, but he's like, how come I'm not being featured? What about me? Ethan Page, I think also people know that he's very good. It's just that he's not in any kind of a prominent position. Maybe you could say somebody like him, Ethan Page, is still underrated by some people. Because I think he could be a major player on that roster too, without a doubt. I also think 2.0. I think Matt Menard and Angelo Parker, we see them usually as the lackeys, right? When we talk about the great tag teams in AEW, who could challenge for the AEW tag team titles, I don't think that they're going to come up in the conversation for a lot of people. But they should be. And at some point, when the Jericho appreciation stuff sort of fades a little bit, whether they're part of the group still or they leave, they are going to branch out and I think be more of a tag team, a prominent tag team on TV. They were praised by people. And they were doing the whole 3.0 thing on the independent scene. Before they came to WWE, people knew how good they were. But people don't really talk about them now as, oh, wow, those guys are really great. Because they've been more character players on the show than going out there and having classic, 15-minute matches or 20-minute matches. I think they're underrated by a lot of people. I think that if given the opportunity, I think they'll prove a lot of people wrong who think that they weren't worth Tony Khan picking up. It's just another example of him picking up people from WWE just for the sake of picking them up because of where they were. They're not good enough. They are good enough. I think some people realize that. The people who don't, though, I think in due time they will realize that these guys actually were a quality pickup, I think, by Tony Khan. But anyway, he says, huge fan of Jamie Hayter, happy that she is getting to wrestle and show how good she is. Anti-M Bishop. 07, Evening Sala Monster. I hope the Gun Boys are good after that dumpster spot. Great show tonight. I hope the Trios tournament turns out good. All the best. It will turn out great if the House of Black walks away with those Trios titles. Rodimus Prime from Adam Cole and crew making a kid cry to Max Caster dropping bars. This was a good show overall. The Yatagaratsu. What is a Yatagaratsu? I have to look that up. $5 super chat. Sup, Solo homie. If we don't get a Choke Me Anna t-shirt by 2023, I don't know what AEW marketing is doing. If AEW ever had some kind of fan fest on the scale of like what WWE does, I think they're leaving a lot of money on the table by not having Anna Jay at her own booth where people have to pay like $175 to be choked by Anna Jay. You would have a line out the fucking door. You killing me? They would make bank on something. All the little creeps would be coming in. Ooh, baby. And then when they're done, they circle right back to the end of the line. They'll do it all over again. You make thousands by the time the day is over. Only thing is, does she really want to put her hands on these people? Does she want to touch all of these people? I wouldn't. She'd make a lot of money. Now the World, 138. With Vin Scully being part of the most iconic call in Mets history and me being a diehard Dodger fan today, has been hard. Any thoughts on the GOAT? Okay, so a Yagaterasu. Is that different than a Yatagarasu? They're saying a Yagaterasu is a three-legged mythical bird. But he spells it differently. See, I'm not sure that that's the same thing. Oh, hey, Brock. There's Brock. Brock Benningfield in the chat. He was at the show tonight. He had the sound-off sign. Shout out to Brock. I showed the sign earlier. We spotted it during the women's match. So thank you again for that. And anybody else who brings a sign, gets on camera, I'll put you on the stream too. Shout out to Brock. Vin Scully, yeah, very, I was sad to hear it. You know, 94 years old, he lived a full life. And by all accounts, you know, no scandal, no bad words to be said about him. In fact, he had a quote once that said, if he was remembered for one thing, what would he want to be remembered for? And he said, I want to be remembered for being a good person, you know, and a decent human being. And at the end of the day, that's all anybody could ask for. It's not about your job. It's not about, you know, the work and all that. It's about, were you a good human being? You know, were you somebody that people respected and liked and loved to hang around with? If that's the legacy you leave behind, I can't think of a better legacy. So I was very sad to hear that he had passed away. Xavier Ware. How many wins does Jade Cargill get before losing? Well, what is she up to? Has she hit 50? Has she hit 50 yet? I know she hit 30. I remember when she hit 30. I don't even know what she's up to. I don't know about hitting 100. It depends where she is now. Is she at 50 yet? Because if she's not even at 50, she's probably not going to go all the way to 100. Says it's a three-legged mythical crow. Also a three-person group from one of my favorite game series, Ace Attorney. All right, well, I'm getting an education tonight because I had no idea. 32. She's up to 32 wins, 34. All right, I think she'll get around 50. Either she'll hit 50 and then lose or get to 49. And then whoever that person is that comes after that will beat her. I still say it should be Chris Statlander. King Bling Blah, Tony Khan versus Vince McMahon in a fist fight. Who wins today? Vince McMahon. It's not even close. Vince McMahon. You put Rhea Ripley in there with Tony Khan or some of the women in WWE. They got some tough ladies there. I'm going to pick Rhea Ripley in that fight. You see what she did to Dominic on Monday? She would wrap those legs around Tony Khan's head and squeeze until his fucking eyeballs bulged out. Shin Akuma, $2 super chat. 2 weeks with no Ezekiel. I am sad. What is going on? It's the Triple H era. 2 weeks of no Ezekiel. 2 weeks of no 24/7 title. Get the fuck out of here. That's a positive start to the Triple H era. Nothing shit. Out with the bullshit. Scene Marine, $4.99 super chat. Just as Jim Ross was the voice of my childhood, you are the voice of my miserable late 20s. Thanks for entertaining me on every hour-long commute. You are the man. Wait a minute. I am the voice of your miserable late 20s? Your late 20s are supposed to be fun. I hope I'm not the one making them miserable. That's awful, though. Your late 20s are supposed to be fun. We got Christopher Smith with the $9.99. I could see with the introduction of Trios titles, we could see Undisputed Era, the Elite, Death Triangle, all could be Trios champions. I would like to see Undisputed win them first. No, it should be House of Black. But you got plenty of options. It should not be the Bucks. It would be so self-serving. It would be so self-serving for the Bucks to be the first ever Trios Tag Team Champions. It should not be the Young Bucks. We are up to 362 likes. I know we have a lot more people than that here right now. So let's get that up. We have got Dr. Scorpio. I picked a worse time to be burned out by wrestling. Going to take a little break from watching any wrestling, but still watch the reviews. Well, as long as you hang out with us, we'll be here. Shinakuma, thank you for the two. First timer, AEW needs to cut at least 30 people. What say you? No, I don't think they do. 30 people? No. You know, Dark is basically like their developmental. Dark and Dark Elevation is like AEW developmental. A lot of those people are on Dark. So as far as the main shows, yes, they have a lot of people that they're trying to feature. They have to do a better job of that. They're starting to with certain people. But no, I don't think Tony Khan needs to wave his wand and have mass releases like WWE does. We got Bikram Monger with the $2.99 super chat. Thank you for that. Christopher Smith, I will forever be a fan of Jamie Hayter. Could watch her any day of the week. Not gonna lie, she is great. Emiliana with the $4.99. Never wanted Hung Bucks back. Hung Bucks. That could mean so many different things. Because I don't think the Bucks were good friends, but I will admit that Matt's face acting tonight sold me enough for the time being. The Hung Bucks. Wow. JM with that $30 Bully the Clown super chat from earlier. Please don't say Ricky Starks will be a huge babyface too loudly. Chris Jericho will want to lock him into a six-month feud. I enjoy the women's tag team match the most as well. Good stuff from Ricky and Oh, you know that if Ricky Starks is going to get a big babyface push, you know that when Chris Jericho is done with the whole world title thing and Jon Moxley, like that's exactly the kind of feud that he would want. He absolutely is going to want to work with Ricky Starks. So it is only a matter of time before we have Jericho and Ricky Starks. I can almost guarantee that. K-Dog's Kennel with the $10 super chat. Longtime viewer of your podcast and just want to say thank you for all your hard work over the years. You and Good Mike Work are by far the top two content creators on YouTube. Well, I thank you for that. And Greg is good people. I've met Greg before. In fact, when I met Greg, I met him on the Jericho Cruise back in 2020. I was in my Orange Cassidy garb. And we were hanging out on the boat for a little bit. Greg's a good dude. I like Greg. Philip Welch, Quake by the Lake. What's next? Doom by the Lagoon. Doom by the Lagoon. Counter-Strike by the Turnpike. I like these names. These are so corny, they're good. Let's come up with more names like this. What other theme names can AEW come up with, rhyming names for future episodes of Dynamite? We have Quake by the Lake on Wednesday next week. I like Doom by the Lagoon and Counter-Strike by the Turnpike. What else can we come up with? Something incorporating like different land masses. What else can we come up with here? I'm sure we could come up with a few good ones in the chat. Ricky Edmond, Ripley said on her tweet that Dom is living his dream. Oh, of course. Are you kidding me? Dominic Mysterio? He's living the life right now. You don't think he loves working with Rhea Ripley every week? She's kicking his ass. You don't think he doesn't enjoy that? Commotion by the Ocean. That's not bad. Siege on the Beach. We could do better than that. Brouhaha at the Baja. Romp by the Swamp. That's pretty good. Quiver on the River. Kick Ass on the Underpass. All right. I think Doom by the Lagoon, though. Doom by the Lagoon is still winning, though, with me. Chateau on the Plateau. Darth Panic, if Triple H were to reboot DX with the current WWE NXT roster, who is he choosing? God. I think you got to have Carmelo and Trick Williams in there, right? Carmelo Hayes, Trick Willie. I think Wes Lee would work also. Wes Lee would work, I think, in a rebooted DX. I think both of the MSK members would have worked in there. Boots with the $10. Thank you, Boots. Putting boots to asses every week. Decided to watch the Raw replay on Sling TV and Hulu ad-free to see if Hulu had full episodes. Did not realize that Hulu heavily edits the episode. Hulu did not have the Rollins and Street Profits segment and the match. I think, correct me if I'm wrong, I think the Hulu version is edited down to 90 minutes. Which I think would be fucking great if Raw was 90 minutes every week. But yeah, no, that's a known thing that they edit the episodes every week. Tuxedo T Servo, thank you for the $5. And Food Hot, I love watching Dark and Elevation while editing. I thought that said eating. But in fact, it says editing. Commotion by the Ocean is also a pretty good one. Bedlam in the Okay, these are getting ridiculous now. Order on the Border. How about Disorder on the Border? That could work too, no? Disorder on the Border. Well, I'm sure they'll be doing more of these in the future, so we'll see what they come up with. I'll try to think on this too. There's got to be some other good ones we can come up with. What was the other one? The underpass one that he had? What was it? Trespass on the Underpass? Why does AEW keep doing special shows every week? Because they think it helps their television ratings. NXT does the same thing. They just don't do it as frequently. NXT is having their Heatwave special, actually, in a couple of weeks. Right? They do New Year's Evil, Halloween Havoc. AEW tends to do it a little more often, but it's no different than what WWE does with NXT. And also, you know, if they're just going to come up with kind of funny names for some of these shows, I don't see what the big deal is. I think it's kind of fun. I just care about the actual show. If the show is good, that's what I care about. Tonight was an improvement as far as the pacing of the show. There's still a lot going on, but it didn't feel as, you know, frenetic as it usually does. And they had a lot of video packages mixed in there. So I think it was a noticeable change watching the show tonight. Rumble in the Jungle, that's not original, but that's not bad. Rave in the Cave. Juan Ocampo says, my cat turns 2 today. Can you wish Ellie a happy birthday? She literally paws at you when I watch your reviews on my TV. Cats know. Cats know. So shout out to Ellie. Ellie the cat. Also watching the sound off. I don't see... Well, I guess Ellie wouldn't be able to leave a thumbs up, right? Because she doesn't have an opposable thumb. So you'll have to do it for her. Dysfunction at the Junction. Rage in the Cage. That's been used before. Oh, shout out to Ellie. I've had 2 cats in my life. I will not have pets anymore. No more pets for me. It's too painful when they go. But I am a cat man. I don't hate dogs, but I've never had a dog. They're too loud. You have to pick up their shit. Cats a lot easier. You just set the litter box up. They know where to go. They know where to shit. It's like, there it is over there. Yeah, they're very independent. I don't have to wake up at 6 o'clock in the morning and go walk them, especially in the middle of winter. It's fucking freezing outside. Right? She knows exactly where to go. It's a lot easier to have a cat than a dog. Food Hive says, my cat's name is Kyle. Or Selena Kyle, a.k.a. Catwoman. Ah, very nice. Very nice. Now you've reminded me of Michelle Pfeiffer in that leather outfit. Let's be the booker.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to be the booker.
It is be the booker time. Noah, shut up. Talking over Noah. Shut up, Noah. This is my segment, not yours. It is be the booker. We're going to try to book ourselves. We're going to have our own little quake by the lake here tonight. Solomon is going to have his own little quake by the lake. We will begin with the men here on Be the Booker. We begin with the Olympic gold medalist who was just featured on A&E Biography this past week, which I am looking forward to seeing. I have not watched it yet, but I've heard good things about it. Kurt Angle. Shout out to Graham, by the way. Graham from Bleacher Report, who did an audio interview with Kurt Angle in preparation for his biography debuting, and he was kind enough to ask Kurt a couple of questions on my behalf, which Kurt did answer, so I would urge you all to find the interview that Graham did with Kurt Angle. Graham Matthews. Kurt is, he's goated, as they say. I know I'm a big Bret Hart fan, but Bret Hart and Kurt Angle, those two right there. I mean, this guy's the goat. Look, I mean, this guy had everything you could ask for in a professional wrestler. He could go in the ring, he could be funny, he could be serious. Anything you asked him to do, he could do. And when he was on his game, and he was always injured, I guess, but when he was physically able to, in his prime, at his peak, there was nobody better than Kurt Angle. Guy was a fucking machine. Even in TNA, Perk Angle. The guy wasn't even there. You look in his eyes, he was like glassy-eyed. But he would go out there, and he would deliver. He had a longer in-ring career in TNA than he did in WWE. It's hard to believe. So let's talk about Kurt Angle, who he's going to be stepping into the ring with. It will be Kurt going one-on-one with Kurt Angle. Oh, I love it. What a fucking match. That's the first time that's ever happened. Kurt Angle, one-on-one with Kurt Angle. I'm going to go out on a limb right now and tell you that that's going to end up being the match of the century. I think Kurt Angle against Kurt Angle could very well be the greatest match of all time. What are the fucking chances? Kurt Angle against Kurt Angle. I don't think I will ever book a better match if I continue to do this for the next year. I mean, that is just, give them all the stars. Wow. You know what? I shouldn't even do the others. I should just end it right here. There's no topping this. We'll do the women anyway, but there's no way. There's no way. There's no way I'm going to be able to top what I just did. We begin to see, what did I tell you? What did I tell you? I had to go fuck the whole thing up. Couldn't leave well enough alone. I should have just ended it right there, go out on a high note. I get the woman with the mole on her face. What the hell is that thing anyway? Looks like a little porterhouse on her cheek. She's got a steak on her cheek. Look at the bottom of it. It's all bloody. This woman has a fucking filet mignon on her face. That's some of that fine Vince McMahon booking. So you don't have to worry about that anymore. Jillian Hall one-on-one. Wait a minute now. I'm going to give that the bell. This right here. This is the real Asuka. This is the Asuka who would murder you. You stepped into the ring with her. This is the Asuka I was kind of hoping we would see at some point in WWE. You know, she missed all that time with injury. I was hoping that we would get Asuka back with the full face paint. We have Pentagon Dark. We have Asuka Dark. I gave that the bell just because watching Asuka murder somebody would be a lot of fun. If you never got to see Asuka back in her Kana days, you need to go look up some stuff on YouTube. Kana was a monster. So let's pick a tag team, Be the Booker. We have Owen Hart and Yokozuna, former WWF Tag Team Champions. Paired up together in 1995 because Yoko was just, he was so big. And this is according to Bruce Pritchard. He was so big that he just He couldn't be a full-time singles guy anymore. They had to put him in a team. So they put these two together as a team. Owen and Yoko, gone far too soon. And they will be stepping into the ring with, look at these two guys. Well, first of all, I got to give this the buzzer. Because this is not a match I care to see. But we have the American males, Marcus Alexander Bagwell and Scotty Riggs. And now all of a sudden I have that fucking song stuck in my head. American males, American males, American males, American males. That's all it is. You want to know the lyrics of the song, just keep saying American males. Just repeat that over and over again. That was their theme song. It looks like a cover of a boy band album. American males. That was their one and only hit song. I should have quit after Kurt Angle against Kurt Angle. Next time, I'm going to trust my instincts. American males. American males. American males. American males. American males. American males. We got some super chats here from Food Hive with the $1.99. Andrade versus Andrade, and now... That's right, I did do that once, didn't I? I did Andrade versus Andrade. That was a long time ago, though. Uffman says Kurt Angle versus Kirk Angel, his evil twin. And Boots, Mayhem at the Mountain, Terror in the Tri-State. Mayhem at the Mountain's not bad. Terror at the Tri-State is kind of weak. I wouldn't go with that one. Mayhem at the Mountain, but like, okay, so the show would have to be at like a mountain somewhere. How would that work? I don't think that would work. But it's not a bad name. American males. American males. Now I'm not going to be able to get that out of my head. It's actually Eric Angle, if you look close. Ah, maybe you're right. Maybe that was Eric Angle doing the exact same pose, though. Wearing the same gear. I don't know. They did look alike, though. Or they do look alike. I know his brother Eric was having some very serious health issues. He needed some kind of a, I don't know if it was a kidney transplant or, I don't know what the update is on Eric. But Kurt was on social media a few months ago pleading with people to get tested. I think it was for a kidney transplant. So I don't know what the update is on his brother, but I know he wasn't doing too well. How would Kurt versus Kurt play out? It would be a very physical affair. I'm sure both Kurt and Kurt would be injured, but I think it would be a tremendous match. It would be a very stiff match, but it would be... an absolutely fantastic match. Now I am sad that we will never get to see it. I do know one thing about that match, though. Kurt Angle would go over. Kurt Angle would win the match. I feel pretty confident in saying that. Tussle in Texas. The Texas Tussle. 2001 Kurt against 2006. You know, that poses an interesting question. What year do you think Kurt Angle was at his true peak in the ring? The best version of Kurt Angle inside the ring, which is not to say that he didn't have great matches in TNA, because he did. I probably would say 2002. I think the one we saw in that image there, actually. I think 2002 Kurt Angle was peak Kurt Angle. Physically in the ring, and he was a machine. He was having great matches. Whatever injuries he had, it wasn't like, you know, the injuries that came later on. 2003, he had the broken neck. I know when he came back, it was like 05, 06, right before he left. He was doing the machine thing, and you know, they put him in ECW and all that, but he was beaten to shit. I mean, really beaten to shit by then. 2002 Kurt Angle to me is like peak Kurt Angle. Like, people ask me, like, oh, you're a fan of Bret Hart. What version of Bret Hart do you like the most? I think Bret Hart was at his peak in terms of physical peak in the ring, the period of Bret that I look back on as my favorite is 1993, 1994, especially 94. And he had those great matches with Austin in 96 and 97, but 93, 94 Bret to me is like peak Bret. You take that Bret Hart against 2002 Kurt Angle, it doesn't get any better than that. Draven Lord, buy or sell, Kurt versus Kurt or Bret versus Bret? Kurt versus Kurt. I would go Kurt versus Kurt. All right, again, hit that like button. We are very, very close. We are closing in. Less than 100. After tonight, it might be even less. Less than 100 away from 70,000 subscribers, which means we'll be celebrating here on the stream sometime, hopefully in these next couple of weeks. But I can't get there without you. So if you are not subbed to the channel, now is a great time to do so. We got another super chat here from JM. Can we get Bret spitting into HBK's face from SummerSlam as a super chat? Drew Johnson would love it. You know what? I might be able to do that. If it's a short enough clip, it should be fine. I think that might be a good idea. He hawked a hell of a loogie at him, man. You watch that SummerSlam 97 finish, man. He enjoyed that when he said, fuck you, and then he just reared back. And it's disgusting because when the camera cuts to Shawn, a close-up of him, after he hit Undertaker by accident with the chair, and Bret covers Undertaker and he's waving, come, count the fall, and they zoom in on Shawn, you could see like he's got spit like above his lip, he's got it like under his chin, it's like dripping down. You know Bret put everything he had into that one. Maybe that's why Shawn didn't want to do the job for him. And he said, I'm not willing to do the job for you because you spat in my face. Bret has good aim with his spit. That's the one thing I learned in 1997. If Bret Hart spits at you, he's going to hit his target. So I'm going to be live Friday night. We're going to be talking SmackDown and most likely we'll be back to Rampage. I don't know what the future holds as far as Rampage. We may get to a point soon where I'm just covering SmackDown on Fridays. Because Rampage, you know, the show this week has some pretty good stuff announced. But there are some weeks where the show, it's kind of like, you know, a glorified version of Dark. And you look at the numbers for Dynamite from last week. And they set a record low. There's fewer and fewer people tuning into the show because the show just doesn't feel important. And so I don't know. We'll keep the Smack Page reviews for now, but I don't know what the future holds. I don't know. So, and especially now, you know, if SmackDown starts to really improve under Triple H, and Rampage just continues to sink, we may have to cut bait. Yeah, well, Beowulf, that's part of it also. It's not just that I don't want to cover Rampage. It's that if I just cover SmackDown, I could go live an hour earlier. It's a lot easier to go live at 10:15 than it is at 11:15. So there may be weeks where Rampage is just completely inconsequential and it just doesn't make sense to cover it. And then there might be weeks where they actually have a match or two that I'm looking forward to. Or maybe it's live, right? This week is live. If there's a taped show and I already know, okay, nothing major happened, you know, I might be less likely to cover it. Battle of the Belts solo. Yeah, I'll talk about Battle of the Belts on Sunday. We'll save that for Sunday. Unless I change my mind. If I get all my shit done, all my prep done for Sunday early, I don't know. I don't know if I need to go live for that on Saturday. I think we could just talk about that on Sunday. You know, it's not even a live show on Saturday. It's being taped on Friday. All right, I'm going to get out of here. I'm going to let you guys go. Have yourselves a great night. Thank you for all of the support. Do hit that like button. Do hit that sub button. Hopefully I'll have good news for you very soon on 70K. But thank you to everybody. And I will see you back here live on Friday night for the SmackDown and Rampage, most likely. I'm going to just rename it SmackDown and Rampage Most Likely Stream. All right, I'm out. Take care, guys.